We classify people as hawks or doves, but in wartime, the military gets absolutely no help from real hawks. Ironically, it's doves that have given real war efforts the most help, at least the domesticated variety of rock dove called the homing pigeon. We have on the phone Lieutenant Colonel retired Jerome J. Pratt, author of Courageous Couriers and the commander of the very last pigeon company in operation during World War II. Thanks for talking to us today, Colonel Pratt.
Pleased that someone is remembering the role that pigeons played during our wars.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of people don't even realize the pigeons were used to carry messages for the U.S. military during both World Wars. Tell us about the Army Signal Corps and their pigeon service.
United States Army first attempted to use pigeons back in the Indian Wars in 1877, but weren't too effective in the locations that they were using them. But then in 1916, they established a loft in New Mexico to give General Pershing support in the Mexican expedition. But then we did not get back into using them until World War I, and that's when they first organized pigeon service was established in the Signal Corps. That was in Europe.
What other countries were using pigeons during that war?
Well, the German Army had established a pigeon service in 1850, and by 1900, all of the European countries had pigeon services.
What kind of messages did the pigeons carry?
Well, they carried all types. In World War II, at critical operations such as river crossings and so on, they maintained radio silence, and the pigeons were bringing back all of the communications from the front lines to division headquarters, and they also carried sketches of map overlays and ammunition reports and things like that.
What exactly comprised a pigeon company?
A pigeon company, there are 9 officers. One was a veterinarian, 148 enlisted men, and we were authorized 4,500 pigeons in each company.
How many pigeon companies were there during World War I?
During World War I, we only had the one company that was in Europe, but we had detachments at all of the bases here in the States and in Hawaii, Panama, and those places. But in World War II, there were 13 pigeon companies established, and 10 of them actually were used in combat.
Were they all located in Europe, or were some in Africa?
No, we had 6 companies in Europe. That includes the one that came up from North Africa. And the other were scattered around in the Pacific, and mainly they were used at platoon strength or smaller detachments. But in Europe, they were used, the companies were, one company went with each of the field armies, and my company was with the 12th Army Group. But during the Battle of the Bulge, I had to send one of my platoons to give 3rd Army's company additional support.
What brought you into the service?
You might say I was probably born into it. I was born in La Crosse, Wisconsin on November 11th, 1910. And my older brother had pigeons before I was born, and my parents were involved in poultry. And so eventually I was managing a game bird farm when World War II broke out. And I decided to, if I had to go to war, I wanted to be a pigeoneer. So I enlisted in the Signal Corps, hoping to get that assignment, and I was lucky enough to get assigned to the Pigeon Service.
The Pigeon Service was pretty elite. Roger Torrey Peterson was one of the most famous and knowledgeable bird experts in the country at the time, and he was the artist who designed the Peterson system of bird identification, which he also used for the military to develop a field guide that they used in identifying enemy aircraft. And he also designed camouflage for military use, but he wanted to be in the Pigeon Service, and he was turned down. What kind of requirements did you have to get in there?
They wanted people that had actually raised pigeons of any kind, but they preferred those that were racing pigeons in civilian life.
Yesterday, you corrected me. I'd always thought that homing pigeons were the same as carrier pigeons.
Yes, that's often a mistake made. The birds used to carry messages are homing pigeons. And there is a breed of pigeons that originated in England that are called carrier pigeons. But the carrier pigeon is strictly an ornamental bird and does not have the homing ability. And I think the reason it may have gotten the name carrier is because the way it carries its body, it's a tall bird with a distinct carriage.
How much of this homing was by instinct, and how much involved training?
It's instinctive, but you have to train them for military use because it's different than what we say consider flying to a stationary loft. To mobile train birds for military use, you start the youngsters when they're about 6 weeks old. In their normal daily flights, they'd recognize landmarks within about 12 or 15 miles of their loft. And so in combat, that was usually about the distance that we would use them because we would be leapfrogging the lofts and moving forward all the time. However, if they're stationed to a stationary loft, those birds, like in the pigeon races, 500-mile races are common.
Now, I read somewhere that some pigeons were actually even trained to return to ships.
Oh, yes. The Japanese fishermen had used pigeons for years that way. And another interesting thing is that in the very first Olympic Games, one of the contestants from a distant village, his father had him take along a pigeon with the instructions that if he won the competition, he was to stain the bird with grape juice and turn it loose so the people in the village would know that he had won. Well, he did win, and the pigeon took the news back to his village.
Do you have any stories from back in the war about dramatic things with pigeons?
Well, the bird G.I. Joe credited with saving 1,000 British lives in Italy. Mm-hmm. That was one of the pigeons we brought back after the war. And there was one experience. The lieutenant in charge of this platoon, his name was Zimmerman from Milwaukee, and they used pigeons to deceive the Germans at one river crossing. The Germans expected the crossing to be at the easiest point to get across, which we did plan on using. So the Germans, they really built up their defenses on the other side. But this pigeon unit, they went upstream about 15 miles from there with a lot of pigeons, and every few minutes they were releasing pigeons. And when German intelligence saw all those pigeons being released there, they were sure that that was the point of the crossing. So they moved their main body of their forces up to that point, and then the Americans went across below where we had intended. So they had been deceived by the use of pigeons in that operation. On Christmas Day, 1944, a couple of pigeoneers with a truck-mounted 50-caliber machine gun did shoot down a German aircraft. That was during the time of the Battle of the Bulge.
What kind of anti-pigeon technology have people used to stop our pigeons from carrying messages?
Well, about the only means which was used in World War I was for the Germans tried to shoot down our pigeons when know with the story of Cherami, shot, had one leg actually shot off and the breast injured, but he still got, or she still got back with the message. But during World War II, the only American pigeon we know of that actually fell into the German hands was on D-Day, and it was one carrying photographic film back from the landing, supposed to go back to England, but it strayed off course, and the Germans captured it in Normandy, or in Cherbourg, but which really wasn't anything sensitive to the intelligence work. Now, of course, we did, in the preliminary training, we did eliminate birds that were weak flyers. We only used birds that proved themselves to be good, healthy, sturdy birds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we would get replacement birds sent over to us from England, and the veterinarian and some of the pigeoneers, they'd meet the aircraft and they'd cull the birds right at the airstrip, and weak ones and so on that the vet decided wasn't going to make it, they were supposed to be destroyed and buried, but I think that they usually gave them to the French people.
What happened to the pigeons after the war? Were any just released?
Well, no. Now, we brought back to the United States, we brought back 1,650 pigeons. The other companies all turned their birds in to me. And the others, we donated to the French Army. But I have no idea what later happened. And then when the pigeon service was phased out in 1957, they had an auction at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. And all of the birds were sold at auction at that time, except the ones that were considered war heroes, and they were donated to zoos in different parts of the country.
How long do these pigeons live?
Normally, you could expect them to live maybe up to 15 or 16 years, but you know, that one bird known as Kaiser that was captured in World War I and brought back to the United States was still alive when World War II started, and some of his youngsters were used by the Americans in World War II. He was about 35 years old when he died, but that's an exceptionally longevity record.
You said that the U.S. stopped using the pigeons in 1957?
Yes.
What made them make the decision to end the Pigeon Corps?
Well, when facsimile and the electronic communications were perfected enough so they could be carried into the field, you know, in backpacks and so on, the U.S. Army felt that that was a more economical means of communication than the pigeons.
I read that France kept their pigeon service going for a long time because they were concerned about electronic communications breaking down.
Right. I know the Swiss continued to keep some pigeons, and the Swiss even offered to provide the Allies with some during the Gulf War if they had needed them, because they knew that the Iraqis were using pigeons to communicate from Kuwait back to Baghdad. But the last pigeons we used were in the Korean War, and they were mostly used by intelligence people. And they took pigeons up to 200 miles behind the enemy lines, the agents did, to send back intelligence information to the headquarters in Seoul.
Do you still have pigeons?
No, but I do have a few little diamond doves. They're little Australian species. They're the smallest of the doves.
Did you ever race pigeons after
that? Oh, yes. Before World War II, I had some racing homers in Wisconsin, and we had a local club. Of course, that's one thing that helped me get into the pigeon service.
Mm-hmm. How about after the war?
Well, I've at times now and then I've had some fancy birds like fantails or frizzles or something. I stayed in the Army until until 1957, same year that the Pigeon Service was dissolved, and went to work for the Department of Army as a wildlife manager.
Was that at Fort Huachuca?
Yes. Hmm. Later, I left the wildlife job at Fort Huachuca and went with the National Park Service. And my last job with the National Park Service was in Hawaii at Haleakala National Park. And there I worked with the endangered Hawaiian goose, the nene. So my occupations after the war were not very, didn't stay in one place long enough to get involved in raising birds again.
Oh, I see. Do you miss working with pigeons?
Not really, because I have been involved with closely related wildlife activities.
Now, you wrote a book about a lot of these experiences called Courageous Couriers?
Yes.
And I imagine that's available. I understand it's out of print, so I guess
yes.
People would have to look for it at their local library.
Right. That's probably about the best place. It was published by the American Pigeon Journal, which is no longer in business.
Well, it's been fascinating talking to you. We've been talking with Lieutenant Colonel retired Jerome Pratt, who was the commander of the final pigeon corps that was used in tactical service during World War II. And it's been delightful talking with you, Colonel Pratt.
Well, it's been a pleasure to recall some